mitzvah or anything?
I don't think so.
According to halacha?
What?
According to halacha?
Sister Shekel and everyone here. Obviously, the share of cloning and stem cell research is a huge topic. In reality, they are huge topics. So, nevertheless, we are going to try to at least have in bite-sized pieces something that's a chatika ruy l'schabe, something that you can at least have a few, I hope, take-home points or insights, or at least shilas, or how to be done on those questions regarding cloning, stem cell research, and perhaps a few other related but relevant issues. I just want to start with two items from Rav Aryeh Kaplan, Zecherei Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. His yahrzeit was at the end of Shvat. So he was recently, his yahrzeit was sometime in the last week or two. So I remember reading from Rav Aryeh Kaplan, it's all relevant to our topic tonight, something similar that they say over B'Shem the Chavetz Chaim. They say over B'Shem the Chavetz Chaim that when telephones started becoming more rampant and more common, the Chavetz Chaim said that for the person who had more of a difficult time grasping the concept that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could hear something, even when from all over the world, so now the telephone gets to show you that you can be anywhere and you can hear anything. So they say B'Shem the Chavetz Chaim. So Rav Aryeh Kaplan, in one of his many, many Svarim and Kudreisim that he wrote, that he goes, he prefaces by saying that I don't necessarily believe that it has to work this way or that it in fact will work this way, but there is no doubt that scientifically speaking, Tchias HaMesim, when the Ikrei Emuna, could happen via cloning. Because cloning is when you take certain cells from the very beginning of its production, and again, we'll talk a little bit more about it in greater detail, but one of those initial cells can be manipulated to sort of copy itself and make another identical clone of the initial parent. And it can be done with even one cell. So Rav Aryeh Kaplan writes, and he says, I'm not saying that this is for sure, Tchias HaMesim is going to work this way. But, like the Chavetz Chaim said, if you had a little of a Shaila Vegan Amuna, so the telephone can help you really understand that you can hear and people can hear and people can listen no matter where they are. So cloning and the science behind cloning could definitely help for the Amuna of Tchias HaMesim. And he goes even further, even if you don't have that original cell, but the direction, I mean, he was nifter already 30 some odd years, and he was writing even back then that the direction that science and technology and medicine is taking, he says, once they learn how to clone properly, it's just another couple of steps to even how to manipulate a different cell or a new cell. So he goes, Tchias HaMesim can happen regarding cloning. Before I continue with the topic of cloning, Bershusa Olam, I want to just mention again something from Rabbi Kaplan. Again, like he says, Yartzeit was this week. About this week's parsha. Often, the couple times that I spoke, often at the end of this year, I'd like to say something about the parsha. But since I already mentioned Rabbi Kaplan, I'll say something now, and totally not relevant to cloning, but I hope everyone's mindful of me, but a little bit of a, to me, it's a little bit interesting. And then we'll get right back into cloning. And this week's parsha is Parsha's Truma. And one of the material and colors that are used for the Mishkan is argamon. If I ask the people in the room, most people would translate argamon either argamon or purple. Most people translate our garment purple. And it's not for naught. The Radak and the Rama both say that our garment is taka purple. And when the Tanoim had to translate the Torah into Greek, they wrote, they translate trelis perfora, perfura, apparently from the perforic snail. Perfora sounds like purple. So the chinuch that probably all of us received, that our government means purple, is definitely well-based or well-founded. Why am I sharing this? Because you should just know that in Ravaya Kalman's Chumash, which, by the way, as another side point, Ravaya Kalman's Chumash is from the only Chumash that I know of that not only lists the Prakim the way we refer to Prakim, but those were chapters that were added Kiddua later, but based on the Psukas and the Stumas of the actual Torah. So that's why it looks a little bit confusing. It looks like there's like an extra 1,000 chapters in the Torah, but those are really the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu had in the Torah, the Psukas and the Stumas. We have the later chapter, parak, or whatever. In fact, they say, I think Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was machmir not to call it parak, he called it kapitel, because really the prakim that we use weren't necessarily Dvarim Shebekdusha. And I once heard a shir pointing out a few times where they actually ended the parak in a place where, like, really not supposed to end, in a place like in Vayera, I remember a few places where it almost makes it look like the idea, or that Moshe Rabbeinu was like not in such a positive light, because again, that wasn't their agenda. But the real program, the real chapters and program, if you look at Ravaya Kalman's Chumash, okay, I'm digressing over digressing, I apologize. But so nevertheless, if you look at Ravaya Kalman's Chumash under our Gaman, he brings down several other shittas. I'd like to share them with you, and then I'll share you why. Then I'll tell you why I'm sharing this with you. Unbeknownst to probably, I mean, I'm sure many Talmidei Chacham do know this, but the masses probably are not aware that Eben Ezra learns that our garment is dark red. The Medrash Rabbah and Bamidbar and the Ravid says that the root of our garment is arag, from woven, it's actually a few different colors. He brings down from a Zayar that is actually greenish, green. Okay, very nice. Why am I sharing this little piece of biblical academic scholarship? Because about a year ago, one of the, no better word for the person, one of the Kaifer, heretic, emails me. I tried finding the email. I couldn't find the email. I'd imagine it's from one of my old emails. But, like, different school, whatever, so I don't have that account anymore. But he emails me, Rabbi Wexler, I have a question. Sure, what's your question? Kiyadua, he didn't write Kiyadua, but you know, our garment is purple. But he writes that he's learning this historically in history that purple, people only started using purple later in history, not when, you know, the Jews were in Egypt. I mean, they know when the Jews were in Egypt. There are archaeological finds when the Jews were in Egypt. And historically, he said that purple was not around at that time when the Yidden were in Mitzrayim. So, what's going on here? What happened to the... How's our government being purple? So, I mean, I said, listen. Reflexively, I said, first of all, I don't mamish hear your kasha. Just because it wasn't widespread doesn't mean they didn't have it. Like, it's not the most far, you know, so it wasn't widespread, didn't mean it didn't exist. Kiyadua, purple is just red and blue. It's, you know, it's made up in common. And second of all, Kiyadua, all the famous Rav Hirsch talks about what red represents, you know, red, you know, animal life or the ground, and blue is the Shemayim, and the red and the blue together is the human, or is the Ruchnis and the Gashmias. And I said, besides, even if there wasn't purple in Mitzrayim, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew they're going to build the Mishkan, so he told them, make sure you take blue stuff and red stuff, or whatever, or according to, it was from the snail, the perforous snail, to get the ingredients necessary to make purple, to make our garment purple. But I don't really hear your kasha, because it wasn't widespread. But you know what? Thank you for the insight. Let me look into it. And I went straight to Rabbi Kalman's Chumash, and then I see that, listen, for whatever reason, we translate our garment purple, and I'm not telling you to change that. But Lamaisa, the Eben Ezra, the Medrash Rabbah, the Ravid, the Zayar, all had different colors for our garment. So I was happy to email him back. I said, "Shkeg for the assist there." And now I learned that, not that I heard your question to begin with, but Rabbi Kalman, his infinite wisdom, knew to bring down these seven other shittas about The Kol HaRagomen. Okay, no one here came for that piece, so let's start talking about Kloni. Okay, again, or really Nachum, or from the beginning. Okay, cloning, in definition, is a plant or animal that is grown from one cell of its parent and that has exactly the same genes as it is, as its parent. So in other words, a cloning, you take a certain cell, and we'll talk about where those cells come from, but a certain cell from a plant or an animal, and through science, through medicine, through technology, through whatever the way they get to fertilize and then produce those cells, it could produce a carbon copy, thus the word clone, a carbon copy of its initial parent. It's well known, it's already 19 years since the first sheep. It was 96, so it'll be, come out 20 years, about the anniversary for Dolly. The first sheep that was cloned, it was obviously when it was cloned, everyone's waiting to see what's going to happen to the sheep. So if you don't know what happened to Dolly, it actually lived for 6.5 years pretty regularly. Gave birth to regular, healthy other sheep. Not sheep, gave birth to other sheep. And at 6.5, it actually got... I don't think you need to say Yanomach when you're talking about sheep. But it got cancer, so they killed the sheep. So at the time, they're rather busy that, why did it die? The life expectancy of sheep are about 12 years or something. So it lived half its life expectancy. So at the time, they're all busy that, oh, maybe Taka died early because the cells that they took were already more advanced. But again, they seemingly would disprove that by just pointing out that because it was a first cloned animal, they actually kept it very indoors. And when you keep sheep indoors, it increases the risk of lung cancer in sheep. Another little piece of trivia there. Anyway, since then, well, that point was not just I'm not just throwing a random piece of trivia. Because when we're going to talk about the halakha about cloning humans, it makes a big nafkamina. If you're going to clone a human and all of a sudden his life expectancy is half of what everyone else is, that would definitely weigh into the shaila if you'd be allowed to clone a human. If it's made kara, the life expectancy is going to be only halfway. Since then, actually cloning was in the news this month as well. Since then, cloning is a huge business, especially in places like China where they need to clone specifically sheep and other animals to feed their billions of people. So cloning animals is already a big business. It works. It goes. As of yet, no one has yet cloned a human. So technically, this part of the shiur is a little bit more in theory as opposed to practice. Although, mamish, this month, not that I'm so current on cloning news, but obviously after I knew I was giving this shiur, some of my notes are talking 20 years old. I gave it since then. But like, I rechecked the news, and actually the CEO of some Chinese company that clones animals, I think they clone, again, not that this is relevant, cloning, they clone sheep and I think the Dover Acher. But he writes that he has no doubt that the ability to clone a human is already in place. And that was a big shock, because people assume that like the two were still not up to there yet, we're busy doing animals. But he writes that he has no doubt that this, I mean, could be he's lying, but we're exaggerating, but I don't say lying, but it could be he's exaggerating. No, it's a classic, he wouldn't lie on that. But it could be he's a little bit exaggerating for the business. But nevertheless, he said the science is really there. What's needed is all the countries to allow it legally and ethically and to be willing to start experimenting. Because obviously the first time they tried cloning a sheep, it didn't work. So he understands that as of now, all the countries, which happened exactly after they cloned Dolly, all the big countries said, okay, we prohibit cloning humans. But he says the technology and the science is already there. What's needed is for the countries to slowly come around, like they say, to come around to realize that they could do it, and to be okay with the first couple of mess ups or tryouts, the experiments that won't work. And then some stuff, he has no doubt cloning will happen. So although this year is more obviously in theory than in practice, at least this part of cloning, but as per the Chinese CEO, it's not that far off. And again, I want to point out that obviously each one of these Nekudais make the Shiloh bigger. Because there could be two Shilohs when it comes to, I mean, there are going to be several Shilohs, which we'll talk about right now. But there could be a couple of Shilohs about cloning. And it could be a big nafgamina if it's an experiment or if it's likely going to succeed. In other words, let's assume that they know how to clone. So obviously the first Shiloh is something that you're allowed to do. Or even if it's something that you're allowed to do, it's something that you should do. So when that time comes, so the person will deal, if you're allowed to, but that we'll talk about soon. But if you should do, obviously you need Haskaf Sater and Adaster to see if it's something that you should do. But even from the halakhic standpoint, it's going to make a nafgamina, a big nafgamina, if it's something that could likely do, or something that they're still playing around with. In other words, there's one cell, can I do research with cloning? So that means taking the different cells and playing around with it and manipulating it. That's one cell. But let's say science reaches a point that knows how to do it. To actually do it could be another cell, and that could go both ways. That could be more of a reason to say that it's mutter, because then you know it's going to end up with a human, not just playing around with cells, which again are either life or potential life, which we'll get to soon. I'm sorry if I'm confusing people already. This is supposed to be the easier part. Or not, or you're just science experimenting it. Like, for example, a dugma. So obviously, Tzar Bal Chaim, we know it's Machlega, Tzar Bal Chaim is Daraisa Darabonim. But there's definitely this concept of Tzar Bal Chaim. Nevertheless, we know if it's for the purpose of the human, eating or for other purposes. So then, to a certain extent, you're allowed to, obviously with as minimal tzar as possible, but then you're allowed to kill the animal to eat. You're allowed to work the animal. It's not like we don't plow with an animal. So now let's say you're going to have a child. Can you do research with an animal? Do you say that that's a likely, do you say that you're not allowed because you're causing tzar to the animal? Do you say that you're allowed because it's for the purpose of helping humans, helping people? So again, that's obviously a totally different share. But in a nutshell, a lot of it comes down to the fact, what is the likelihood that you're going to succeed? Is it just random research? Or is it something that you know more or less likely is going to work? The more geshmaka shayla by cloning, not just mutter usser, is going to be having to don what exactly is the status of the new cloned individual. You have a couple of options. What's the relationship of the new cloned individual to the person who gave that initial cell? Now, let's say there was a lady that they got that initial cell from, and from that cell they're able to clone another girl. So now, they have the same exact identical genetic DNA. And the new individual came from the other person. So is it a mother-daughter? Or maybe since they had the same genetic DNA and it wasn't through B or through anything else, it's like a twin. Or maybe there's no relation at all because you really just took a cell and somehow manipulated the cell to grow and produce and become a new human being. So it's not related at all. It's like a new, not mama Jeshmein, but it's like not related at all. So even a Shiloh, and again, this is a little bit more difficult scientifically to do, but it sounds like it's technically possible. Again, it would be technically possible with their proper manipulation. Let's say the cell came from a man, and then they were somehow able to manipulate it that's all they needed, the self and the man. We'll talk about soon maybe why they would more likely be a lady, but let's say it's from a man. So then all of a sudden there's this guy, is the father, the mother, like what's the status of the original cell, where the cell came from, regarding the new individual. I see a lot of curious faces, a lot of blank stares. Let me try to be modest one more time quickly before we move on. To clone, because, and again, all this has not been done yet, so we don't know exactly how it's going to be, but to clone, you have that one cell with enough, with the already the past what was needed to be given from the male and the female, and you have that one cell, and from that cell, they're able to manipulate its growth to a full person, or a full body, or a full, you could do a full organ too, we'll talk about that soon, to a full body, to a full self. So now, so this new cloned chetzah, like that, this new cloned being came from that cell. Now that cell came from somebody, so let's say it came from Rachel. So now, is Rachel this new clone individual's mother? Maybe, because the mice of this cloned individual came from Rachel. Or maybe, that new cloned individual, since it has the exact same DNA, is really like a sibling, or a twin, because they would have the same genetic DNA as twins. Same everything. So maybe it's a twin. To make the shiloh even more exciting, let's say, and again, this is less likely, but possible, let's say that initial cell didn't come from a lady, it came from a man. So they're able to take that cell and reproduce it in a way that it gave birth. That it gave forth to a new clone, the chetzah. So now, is this father a father? Is it a mother? Is it both? Is it neither? The shiloh are endless.
Maybe it is, bro.
It could be they're both the same. And if I'm you and you're me.
What was the other reason? Suicide?
Yeah. Who gets to pay the therapy bills? Yeah. I mean, I also saw them handling of like, if you're yaitzeh the mitzvah of Peru Revu, that with clone. Saying that's like, and it's an interesting child. I'm not, every drop of halacha is important. But in the scheme of things, the hierarchy of things, I don't know if that's really. On top of the issue, you had the Yechiva Peru Revu through cloning. Now, so those are the shilas about cloning. So now, how would we answer shilas about cloning? So, the answer, Lechaira, is that although cloning, we do not yet have cloning humans, but we do have stem cell research. And as we get to an election year, you get to hear this a lot. And it's worth spending a couple of moments trying to get this concept of stem cell and stem cell research clear. And you'll see how closely it's related to cloning. So although we don't have specific Piskei Halacha about cloning, but with stem cell research, we already have several Piskei Halachas from Gedalia Paiskim. And from that, we actually could look or glean back towards cloning. The easiest definition for stem cell, a simple cell in the body that is able to develop into any one of various kinds of cells. So for stem cell, you're not taking a cell and manipulating it to clone a whole human being, but you're taking a cell and you want to, for example, reproduce a liver. Someone needs a liver transplant. This is the direction that science is going, or would like to go. I will talk about why it's like to go. But someone needs a liver transplant. So first of all, we know that it's not always so easy to get a match for a liver. And then even if there is a match, sometimes the body rejects the other person's liver. So whatever the statistics are. So science, and again, technology and medicine, through stem cell research, could take that cell from the person and again manipulate it, and science could do this already more or less, or they think they can, because they do it with animals a little. I actually saw that they tried doing a human liver in an animal, which is weird if you think about it, because then they could do like a human hand in an animal, a human foot in an animal, so then before long the animal is going to look like a human. But we'll actually talk about that soon at the end there.
It sounds
But again, the desire or the direction is you take the self from the person, from the sick person, and you manipulate those cells, stem cell research, and it's still in the category of research, but you work with that cell to produce a healthy liver. So this way, since it's from the own person's cell, you know it's going to be a match. So you know you automatically, but you most likely don't have that issue of the body rejecting the liver, and you know you could manipulate the size and everything else. So that's why there's a big desire to do stem cell research. Again, not to smooth politically, but by and large, I'll explain why in a moment, by and large, Democrats push very much stem cell research and, more specifically, funding your tax dollars for stem cell research. And by and large, obviously there are exceptions on both sides, but by and large, Republicans, I don't know if it's fair to say they're against stem cell research, although I'm sure many are, but they're definitely against, for the most part, having the government fund stem cell research. And the reason why, the primary reason why they are against government funding of stem cell research, because they feel, and again we could talk more about this after, because they feel, first of all, it's too much like cloning, definitely like a slippery slope, because they can start manipulating people and bodies, and also it is taken, for the most part, which is where it's, this is the segue that we need, it is taken from fertilized, from the, once it's already fertilized from the zucker and the nekeva, let's say for IVF, in vitro fertilization, so they put together from the zucker and the nekeva, as in the Petri dish, and then before they put it in the lady to continue to be able to continue through gestation to have the baby, so they look and they do, they'll use some, and the extra ones, the other ones, are out there. They're sitting there in the Petri dish. So those, but it's already fertilized. It's already both the zarg and the cave together fertilized in the dish, but they're not using it. So you could argue, and this is an important point if you're spacing out, click back in right now, you could argue that is really kemah, using that and playing around with that is mamas kemah, like aborting, killing a potential life, if not life itself. Because it's already fertilized between the zarg and the nekev, it's in the Petri dish. It's mamas government, again, I'm not talking about politics here, but the Republicans look at that and say that is government funding of abortion, and we're against that. Fine. So now, we'll see how we could apply this to cloning, but for stem cell research, there's already a lot of halakhic shilas and answers. And those the Pesachim already deal with stem cell research. Now again, let's go back again. Stem cell research is basically you're taking a cell that's already fertilized, which could potentially be, if used to put in, to be implanted, could be one technically a regular child, but it's used at that point in its stage of the cell's growth. It can be used, or hopefully to be used, to manipulate and to grow specific organs. I should have pointed this out to begin with. We're talking about Rabbi Kaplan. The human body, obviously, is nisim gluyim. But every cell that we have, every cell of our body really contains the ability to reproduce every one of our organs that we have in ourselves. And those, we are billions of cells. Each one of our cells has enough ingredients in our cell, in each cell, to reproduce whatever organs we need. So that really is the side of stem cell research, to take those cells, and like I said, the person needs a liver, to reproduce a liver, there'll be a healthy fit for that person. Now, where are those cells taken from? The most likely or the most common place that they're taken from are those unused IVF Petri dishes. They're called the Petri dish. The unused IVF Petri dish, where it's again fertilized between the zarg and the cavus and the Petri dish, and they're not using it. So let's stop right there. What is the status, what is the halachic status of those things in that Petri dish, of those cells in that dish? Does it have the regular halachas of aborting or not? Now again, there's not really the time or the place to go through a whole share about that, about the halachas of abortion, but what's just to make it a little bit clearer, there are several reasons why abortion is usur. Abortion is usur. There are several reasons. According to some places, and again, this is obviously you smooth, but we'll just be brief for this point. According to some, Paiskim is mamish murder. And according to other Paiskim, it's still usur, but it's not murder. It's usur because it's Lilisama Dam Reva, there's Chavala involved, there's Hezek involved, there's, if the halacha is that if I see that you left your, if I see a hurricane is coming and you left your stuff outside, I have an obligation to save your money and bring it in for you. Kavul Chomer, if I have the opportunity to save a life or a potential life, I have to do that. There are many reasons why abortion is usur. Now, the nafka mina is why it's usur. And again, there's really another whole separate share, but you'll see it's how it's relevant. So again, with muscle, if according to the punishment that hold that abortion is murder, so then if let's say, and again, obviously these are your child, it's relevant, but a step over step. So if let's say the lady is expecting a baby with a Ladugma, chromosomal abnormality that the baby is not going to live. So if abortion is murder, doesn't make a difference that the child is not going to end up living. If it's murder, it's murder. When it's a fetus, it's still considered enough of a life to be considered murder, so then it's murder. Doesn't make a difference that there's a chromosomal abnormality that the baby's not going to live anyway. You can't do it. But if it's not mamish murder, but it's also because of other reasons, so then it could be this makim for exceptions. Obviously, this is not the place to discuss or pass on those silos, but these are silos that are dealt with. There's a big makim between Rav Moshe and the Tzitz Eliezer, and there are different opinions in between. So let's get back to the Petri dish. And if you want to ask me those silos more, I'll gladly talk to you about it over the chalent and kishka. It's not real kishka anyway. So what's the status of the things in the Petri dish? And a big nafka mina now. Is it the same halachas or not? And it's a lomdish shaila too. Because on one hand, it's the same fertilized zachen that could lead to life. So l'chari, the same way we don't abort, then we shouldn't be able to play around with these stem cells. On the other hand, you could be machalic. You could say, nevertheless, if we leave it in the Petri dish, although it's fertilized now, but if we leave it in the Petri dish, nothing's going to happen. It's not going to grow on its own. It's not going to become a baby in the dish. It has to be by the mother. So, you could be machalic. It's a good child. It's a lumbus or shiloh. Do you say, hind it's fertilized, it's the same alok, and you can't discard it, you can't play around with it and kill it or whatever else? But you say that it's different because it's not left as is, it's not going to go anywhere. It's a lumdus shaila. So the shaila was asked to Rabbi Yashiv and Rabbi David Feinstein. I'm sure others as well, but those are the two that they bring down most commonly. And they both paskin, actually for slightly different reasons, but they both paskin that you're allowed to discard it. You don't have to keep it, because again, if it's a potential life, as the symbol of the worst, you should be chayav to keep it. And they both said that you could discard it. This is before the shayla of stem cell research came up. They just wanted to know, can they throw it out? But they have to keep it, forever and ever. And Rabbi Yosef the son, Rabbi David Yibod L'Chaim, both said that, yeah, you can destroy it. Yet, because it's not going to end up living on its own, it doesn't have a status of even the potential chai, of potential life, or the fetus, or anything else, and therefore, it can be killed. You can't discard it. So, L'Chaim, if so, so therefore, halakhically, you may, again, obviously there's the issues of hashkava and the slippery slope and everything else that halacha would need to deal with. But then, based on that, stem cell research would be permitted. Because again, if you could discard it, you could research it. And you could try to manipulate it to have a liver, to have a healthy lung, or whatever else is needed. Because again, if Rabbi Yosef said that you could discard it because it's not a potential chai, it's not a life, then you can for sure use it for research. So if so, one can argue that for cloning also, let's take it back to cloning. If so, one could argue that L'chair from the, again, obviously Ashkava Sater is needed, but for this letter, strict letter of the Halacha, one could argue L'chair that cloning will be in the same category. If left alone, it doesn't happen. It's not going to happen. Or it doesn't just like, oh, it's cloned and it's going to produce the new cloned human being. It needs the constant manipulation. And L'chair, even the first step is going to be, even by cloning, would also be, you know, put in gestation by the mother as well. Eventually they feel it could be done even without the mother. But at first, initially, it's definitely going to be through ending up being in a mother. But right now, L'chair is not going to happen automatically. It's not like you put it together and then like, boom, a few months later, it's going to be the cloned individual come up. So if so, L'chair, it's mamish the same type of shiloh of stem cell research. And we see that the place would say by stem cell research that doesn't have a status of a chai yet. And therefore, you could research it. So if so, you could research it. Then L'chair, you could do what needs to be done. And it ends up being a new cloned human being. One could argue that it's mutter. Or at least it can be done. Or Allah would allow you to do that research to reach that perhaps stage of cloning, perhaps. Now, what status would that cloned individual have? Would it have the status of a twin, a mother, a father? So again, these types of shilohs, believe it or not, are not a little bit, they are spoken about. Negeh, let's say, artificial AI, or even perhaps through IVF, through a specific donor. So according to most Paiskim, in other words, let's say the things need to be from a donor into the mother. So according to most Paiskim, the mother is the one that eventually gives birth to the child. So Mizalman Arbach Zatzal held that both have the status of the mother. The one who actually gave birth and the original and the donor. By cloning, according to the first Shita, one could argue that perhaps if it's done without a mother, there'll be no parent to that cloned individual. Because the donor was nothing. It only, if it happened, it was born through the mother. It wasn't born through the mother, it was just cloned. So then that cloned individual may have no parent. So, no mitzvah, keep it off the aim. What? Yeah. No mitzvah, keep it off the aim. Okay, but...
You don't get Yerusha.
No, Yerusha, yeah, a lot of technical details. But going to the Rishonim Zalman L'Chair, then the parent of that original cell will be the mother. Perhaps either the father too, but that's a little bit too crazy to work out it to talk about.
Does it have a dinyan, or it doesn't even have a dinyan?
I don't know. You don't say kasher, I don't know.
Are they even Jewish?
What?
Are they even Jewish?
Maybe not even Jewish. Okay, very good. Now really, 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 just to go back to the beginning, shkeh. But really, really, to go back to the beginning, for how long theoretical practice or not, I mean, it'll be funny if, like, pull out the archives in a bunch of years and see what was predicted on today, Bays, Gimel, Adar, Aleph, whatever year we're in. But you can clone an animal. So I got a little bit mushadik. You can clone an animal because an animal is not an animal. It's not a chaya, it's not an animal. But we're not animals. We have a neshama. Koyach ha-dibur. Segel. When are these things coming in to effect by the cloned, the new cloned, even if we call them the new cloned human being, the new cloned being, I don't know. Say, the clone of sheep, okay, a sheep, no, ain't sheep, two sheep. So you count sheep and you go to sleep. But a human being, even if you clone a human being, who knows if they're going to have the ability to speak? They have no idea if he's going to be able to speak, if he can think. So even if they do end up cloning, and again, that's probably goes into the research silo, it may be a golem. A golem. Oh, and we're going to close with what the Chacham Tzvi says about a golem. Because again, part of the shayla about cloning, what its status was, maybe it won't work, maybe it would work, or maybe it would just be a golem. So Maisa, without getting into the, I'm interested in taking a poll about, yeah, golem, no golem, but whatever, or what the golem was capable of doing, the Gemara should talk about it, but exactly what the golem was capable of doing, the Chacham Tzvi writes, and he says, the Maisa, an afkamina, if you count the golem for a minion, can you count, you know, all these other shilas? Is he Jewish? Like, but in all these other shilas, so the Chacham Tzvi writes, Lamaisa, it depends what the golem does. And I don't remember his exact lashon, but the Chacham Tzvi writes, if it walks around like an animal and acts like an animal and can't talk like a human, so just have a status of an animal, you don't count the golem for a minion. But if the golem, Taga, has the ability to talk and has some type of dibur, some type of seichel, some type of thing. She says, Ken Zion, the golem, however he's created, can have a status of a human being. So I say, back to cloning, we'll end with this nakuda. We don't know what it's going to be. But even if it's a golem, even if it works, it ends up being a golem, we have already sources in Allah on how to deal with those silos. Yes, you can.